The Vape Passion Show, episode 69. In this episode, we're going to talk about an e-juice review of Glazed Donuts by Loaded E-Liquid, Jay Hayes versus Mike Vapes, Jay's perspective, vape reviewers that don't cuss, a police officer gets prison time for selling e-cigarettes to inmates, the Tobacco Control Journal caught hiding sample size to falsely claim that vaping is a gateway to smoking, and does pre-made e-juice need to steep again after adding more nicotine? Hey, welcome back to the Vape Passion Show. This is episode 69, giggity, and I'm recording this on Saturday, May 13th. I just got done spending about 3 hours in the sun doing yard work, so I'm tired and maybe even delirious, and because of that, I've decided to quickly add a beer segment to the show this week. So, this time I'm trying Wheat Ale from Finkel & Garf, which is a brewery out of Boulder, Colorado. This beer is self-described as a tart, dry, and crisp wheat ale brewed with cherries and black currants. You can see it has a reddish color. It looks really good. That is really good, actually. It's a wheat ale, for sure. If you like wheat ales, I think you'll probably like this one. A mild flavor. Slight hint of cherries and black currants. You can barely get it, but it is there. And it's pretty good. All right, now I just want to do a quick correction this week. So I believe last week that I mentioned that HR 1136 was stripped from the fiscal year 2017 budget bill, but it was actually the Cole Bishop Amendment. And they both pretty much do the same thing as far as changing the predicate date, but they are separate things. And the main reason this is important to know is because when you reach out to your legislators, you need to be correct about what you're requesting that they support at the right time. It doesn't matter much right now, because that amendment was stripped a couple of weeks ago, but it will matter again in 5 months when the Cole Bishop Amendment is added back into the next budget bill. Anyway, as far as vape stuff goes, nothing new in this week, which is fine by me. I have too much stuff in my backlog anyway. So let's get right into the show this week. So first, let's do an e-juice review for Glazed Donuts by Loaded. So Loaded is actually manufactured by Ruthless Vapor out of Southern California. Some people love Ruthless and some people hate them. I love them, so I'm thinking that I'm going to really like this one. So I met these guys at a convention last year. They were actually promoting themselves as MFG Brands, which I think is their real business name, or at least the name of the wholesale manufacturing side of their business. Anyway, they hooked me up with this for the purpose of review, so let's check it out. So the bottle I got is 3 milligrams nicotine, but it also comes in 0 milligrams and 6 milligrams. It's a 70 VG 30 PG e-juice, and Loaded describes this flavor as a classic glazed donut, sweet, flaky, doughy goodness. A very slight donut smell, but not very strong. I'm using the Predator 228 with a Goon RDA on top. It's built at 0.27 ohms, and I'm vaping it at 172 watts. Yeah, it has a donut flavor. I did see some reviews of this, and some people were saying that it had a bit of a cinnamon flavor, and other people said it didn't, but I am kind of getting a little bit of a cinnamon flavor, just very slightly. It does taste like donuts. It's a very mild donut. I wouldn't say it's like a Krispy Kreme donut or anything like that, but yeah, that's pretty good. It's the flavor isn't as strong as I would like it to be, but it's good. So this is the donut e-juice that Vape and Fagan always used to talk about. I don't know if he still vapes it, but he loved it for a long time. And it seems to be pretty affordable too. Looking around online, I see shops selling it for around $20 for a 120 ml bottle, which is the only size it comes in. So I think that's a pretty good deal. All right, so let's get into the topics. The first one this week is Jay Hayes versus Mike Vapes, Jay's perspective. So I want to provide an update to the Mike Vapes versus Jay Hayes drama that I talked about last week. One of Jay's subscribers saw my vlog about this last week and then let Jay know about it. Jay watched it and then left a comment on my video, which eventually led to us talking on the phone. So I called him last week and we talked about his side of the story. First, I want to say that it was really cool of Jay to get on the phone with me. I'm just a small channel, and what I say isn't really going to affect a large channel like his, but he actually took the time out of his day to talk to me, and I think that says a lot about what kind of person he is. I wasn't originally going to discuss this drama between Mike and Jay in the first place, but Mike Vapes, ST Vapes, Heavy, and all those guys who do all those live shows together, they just kept bringing it up, so I decided to talk about it. After having talked to Jay and hearing his side of the story, I almost wish I never involved myself in the drama, but I'm actually kind of glad I did too, because I got to see who Jay really is, which is very much like the guy you see in his videos. He's a genuine guy that gets straight to the point, and he doesn't hide anything. Unfortunately, I didn't record the call, which Jay actually said would have been cool with him, but I wish I did. But I did take notes, so I wouldn't get anything wrong. Jay admitted to me that he was a little pissed when he saw my video and all the things that I was saying in there, but then he finally in the video, I mentioned that all of it was Mike's side of the story, not my own opinion. That made me laugh, because I do have a tendency to do that a lot, not just in my videos, but in daily life. When I should add a disclaimer before my stories, I tend to add them at the end after getting people all pissed off at me. Now, I don't know why I do that. Maybe I do it on purpose because I'm kind of a jerk, but I still think that even after the call, Jay might have been a little upset with me, and that's okay. It's totally justifiable, but He was really nice to me the whole time on the phone. But anyway, let's get back on track. So let's talk about Jay's side of the story. First, Jay talked about his relationship with Mike. They've talked with each other before and they've been acquaintances for a while. They would ask each other questions and they had a good relationship. No problems at all. And at some point in their discussions with each other, Mike told Jay that he was coming out with an RDA and that he'd send one to Jay to do a review. So time goes by and Jay never gets the RDA. He sees other reviewers with much smaller channels getting them directly from Vandy Vapes, so he doesn't know what's going on. So he asks Mike about it, who tells him that they forgot to send it out. Now, in my original telling of the story, I mentioned that Mike said that Jay was mad about Vandy Vapes taking him off the early reviewers list and putting him on the retail version list. Jay had no idea that there was even an early version of or retail version list, so Mike's claim here doesn't seem to really hold up. Mike had said that Jay started calling other reviewers has-beens and nobodies, but on the phone, Jay told me that definitely didn't happen. He said he would never talk about somebody like that. He just doesn't trash talk people because that's not what he would want for himself. So Jay never did get an Icon, so he went out and bought one for himself. Jay did tell me that this did make him a little bit mad. Mike, who Jay considered a friend, even if it's only online, told him that he'd send him an Icon to review, and he never did. He wasn't mad that he didn't get an Icon for free. He was mad that Mike didn't live up to his word, so I can understand that. Okay, now let's talk about where most of this drama stems. Jay's temperature testing. Now, I still disagree with his claims that the Icon gets extremely hot at 107 degrees, but that's his opinion, and I should respect that. I did a test by drinking water at 107 degrees, and it wasn't hot at all to me, but then that's just my opinion. Maybe it actually would be hot for some people. And Jay told me that after getting so much hate for using a cheap, inaccurate infrared temperature sensor in his original test, he actually went out and bought a high-quality FLIR thermal sensor and found that the atomizer actually reached temperatures of 120 degrees. But by this point, he was already tired of beating a dead horse, so he decided not to release an update on that. He also wanted to point out that with his reviews, it's not just him trying stuff out. Everyone else in the shop that he works in tries these out too, and in the case of the Icon, other people in the shop thought it was too hot too. Now, after hearing this and seeing other people saying that the Icon gets hot, I wonder if there's a quality control issue. Mine doesn't get hot after chain vaping, but obviously other people think it does. So maybe some of these atomizers do get pretty hot. All right, now let's discuss the final score that Jay gave, the Icon, which was a 6 out of 10. I originally felt like this score was a little low, but after thinking about it and taking into account Jay's review style and how he normally rates products, this is actually a pretty good score. Jay is blunt and truthful, and Jay told me on the phone that people saw that review and confused his passion for an attack on Mike, but that's not what it was all about at all. A lot of these people, they might not even be familiar with Jay's style, and they jumped to conclusions. Okay, so last week I also mentioned that I felt like Jay went really far out of his way to try and find something wrong with the Icon, but after talking with him about this, I can see why he did it. He said that the reason he did such a thorough testing of the Icon wasn't because he wanted to find something wrong with it. It's because Mike put his name on it. Jay felt that should mean something. If a reviewer puts their name on a product, it should be top-notch, and it shouldn't get a free pass. So in the end, I'll probably never know all of the details. Maybe both Jay and Mike are being truthful, and there were simply just some misunderstandings throughout all of this. All said and done, I like both Mike and Jay. I'll continue watching both of them. But I do have to say that Jay is one of the most trustworthy reviewers out there. He buys a lot of the stuff that he reviews, and he's honest. So if you're looking for a reviewer to follow, he's one of the best. And if you want Jay's advice on a great RDA in the same price range as the Icon, he told me to get the Troll V2, which you can find for around $20, so go get one. So let's talk about the next topic, vape reviewers that don't cuss. So you may or may not have noticed if you've been watching my videos, but I don't cuss in any of them. I saw a comment on one of Homeboy Josh's videos from someone complaining about reviewers cussing in all of their videos. This person was upset because he wants to watch videos about vaping while his three-year-old is in the room, but he can't because of all the foul language. Now, as the father of a three-year-old, I totally get it. I watch YouTube videos all the time, but I can't usually watch vape videos while my daughter is in the room because of all the cussing. Now, in case you're wondering, my little girl isn't sitting next to me when I'm watching vape videos. I usually play videos in the background while I'm working, and then she's, you know, off somewhere else in the room playing with her toys. But anyway, the first time that I noticed that this all this cussing was when I was listening to one of DIY or Die's podcasts about a year ago, and they cuss almost nonstop. And ever since then, I've noticed that most reviewers pretty much cuss all of the time. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. I don't mind foul language myself, but it just means that I can't watch these videos while my daughter's in the room or nearby. Now, personally, I don't really cuss all that much, but I do get a bit of a foul mouth when I'm hanging out with friends and, you know, having a few beers. But when I started my YouTube channel and my podcast, I made the conscious decision not to cuss at all on my videos or on my podcast because I wanted it to be accessible to everyone of appropriate age, of course. Now, I want to deliver content that I would be comfortable showing my mom, and I think there are some people out there who appreciate that. But if you're looking for other reviewers who don't swear, my top choice would be Tony from the Vapor Trail channel, and two other reviewers who rarely swear would be Todd from Todd's Reviews and Phil Bisardo. And there are three others who I'm not totally sure about, but I'm pretty sure that they rarely, if ever, cuss, are Scott from I Getcha 69, Tia Vapes, and Vaping Vic from the UK. And finally, two reviewers who do cuss, but not very often, would be Grim Green and Suck My Mod. I'm sure there are other reviewers out there, but those are some of the bigger ones that I subscribe to. If you guys have any recommendations for reviewers who I can add to this list, please let me know. I'd like to check them out. And if swearing does bother you, whatever you do, don't watch The Vaping Bogan. All right, now here's an interesting story. A police officer gets prison time for selling e-cigarettes to inmates. Robert Arnold, a former sheriff in Rutherford County, Tennessee, took part in an illegal scheme involving selling electronic cigarettes to jail inmates. Robert Arnold created a company called Jail Cigs in partnership with his uncle, John Vanderveer, and he directed his jail employees to sell and distribute these e-cigarettes to inmates. Arnold used his status as sheriff to allow them in as non-contraband. Arnold, his uncle, and Arnold's chief deputy, Joe L. Russell, also tried to get other jails in on this deal by offering the jails $5 for every e-cigarette that they sold. This business was set up in 2013 and was uncovered in 2015. Arnold had received over $66,000 from the company, and Vanderveer received over $49,000. I'm not sure how much Russell received. After realizing that they were busted, Vanderveer even told his sales representative to destroy her commission sheets so that they could create fraudulent versions showing that she was getting the payments rather than Vanderveer. Arnold and Russell pleaded guilty to wire fraud, honest services fraud, and extortion back in January 2017, and Arnold was sentenced a week ago on May 4th to 50 months in prison, which is 4 years and 2 months. He'll also have to pay $52,000 in restitution and forfeit $66,000 of earnings. That's crazy. They took this huge risk for only about a year's worth of salary, and not only are they losing all the money they made, they'll also have to pay more in restitution and serve a lot of time in prison. The other two guys have yet to be sentenced, but both are scheduled for sentencing later this year in September. Okay, let's talk about something else. So the Tobacco Control Journal was caught hiding the sample size of their study to falsely claim that vaping is a gateway to smoking. So there was a study performed by the BMJ Tobacco Control Journal, which was based on the data from the fairly popular Monitoring the Future study. So this new study was designed to determine if vaping could predict future cigarette use with youth. They looked at 347 12th grade students who were part of a survey in 2014, and then who were surveyed a year later in 2015. What the researchers determined based on the second survey was that non-smoking youth who had tried vaping were more than four times more likely to report that they had smoked a cigarette in the following year. Among the students who had smoked cigarettes prior to the survey, but not recently, those who vaped were twice as likely to have smoked a cigarette in the next year. They concluded, the researchers, that the results of this study show that there is growing evidence that vaping is a one-way bridge to cigarette smoking among youth. Now here's where things get interesting. Dr. Michael Siegel reviewed the results of this study and noticed that there was something strange going on. The authors never revealed the sample size of the kids who tried an e-cigarette at baseline and then went on to try a cigarette in the following year. Well, it turns out it was four. The authors didn't reveal this information in the online supplement to the study either. Dr. Siegel actually had to calculate the sample size based on the raw data. Clearly, they tried so hard to hide the data because they knew that a sample size of four did not prove that their claim that vaping leads to smoking. In fact, the results of the study show that 13 non-smokers had vaped in the past month, not daily. That means that vaping not only doesn't lead to smoking, but it also doesn't lead to regular vaping. Dr. Siegel also looked deep into the data of these four students who smoked a cigarette in the year following the baseline survey. Well, it turns out that none of them had smoked more than two cigarettes in the entire year. These students had experimented and tried a couple of cigarettes, but they never became regular smokers. So there's a pretty good example of the types of studies you get from BMJ's Tobacco Control Journal. Okay, and the final topic of the week, does pre-made e-juice need a steep again after adding more nicotine? So I want to talk about a thread I saw on Vaping Underground Forum asking if e-juice needs to steep after you add more nicotine to it. Now most people who responded said that it doesn't need to steep and that all you need to do is shake it up really well. But in my experience, this isn't always true. I buy 0 milligram nicotine e-juice all the time because it's always on sale. And then I add my own nicotine to it. So I do have a little bit of experience here. Now I found that no matter how well you shake it, the nicotine doesn't distribute evenly unless it has time to actually sit and blend with the mix, with the entire mix, usually after a couple of days. Mixing it with a mini blender seems to work pretty good though, right away. But if you're just shaking it and vaping, you might get a spot that either has very little nicotine or a whole lot of nicotine. And I've had this happen to me, and getting a whole lot of nicotine sucks. And something to note is that nicotine can help e-juice steep faster, but it shouldn't change the flavor of an already steeped e-juice. I've seen people say that nicotine can change the flavor due to it oxidizing, but I'm not sure that's true for an e-juice that has already steeped. I could be wrong, but I've vaped every single one of my 0 mg e-juices before adding nicotine, and I've never noticed a change in flavor afterwards. And something else to keep in mind is that you could dilute the flavor of your e-juice, depending on the strength of your nicotine. For example, if you're trying to turn a 15 ml bottle of 0 mg e-juice into a 6 ml e-juice and you're using 24 ml nicotine, you would have to add almost 4 ml of nicotine base. That would really dilute the flavor. But if you use something stronger, like 100 ml nicotine base, you'd only have to add 1 ml, which would be much less noticeable. I don't consider myself to be an expert DIYer, so if any of you have any additional tips here, please feel free to share. Okay, that's all I have for this week. You'll find the show notes for this episode on vapepassion.com. Just do a search for episode 69. If you want to support the show, consider donating to my Patreon page at patreon.com/vapepassion. You can follow me on Twitter at vapepassion, and I'm also on Facebook if you want to leave me a comment. If you like the show, I'd love it if you gave me a review on iTunes. You can also catch the video version of the podcast on YouTube. If you'd like to get notifications of new reviews or of the show, you can sign up to receive my weekly email on vapepassion.com. And if you have any questions or comments, feel free to email me anytime at alex@vapepassion.com. All right, I'll see you next week.